Simply the best. We have a new, most winningest coach at Iowa in the program history as of Saturday. Coach Ferentz passes the legend, Coach Fry, by one win. And Tori, what do you think? Ferentz, Fry?
Well, first of all, kudos to picking out that song because, you know, like Kirk Ferentz, it's kind of rooted in the 80s. It's kind of cheesy, not super flashy, but it gets the job done. Tina Turner. Classic, going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think Kirk Ferentz has a shot at the College Football Hall of Fame. So, yeah, no.
He's in.
You know, when you talk about Ferentz versus Fry, to me, it's always been kind of an apples and oranges comparison because one is a program builder and the other one is a program maintainer and, well, I guess rebuilder for that standpoint. You know, I think Ferentz himself even said it in that really nice article Scott Dockerman did, you know, that he's doesn't have the swagger. He doesn't have that oversized personality that Fry had. I personally really like that. I enjoyed. I thought Iowa needed that at the time. But could not have asked for a better, I guess, standard bearer for the Iowa program. The steady hand that's kept it relevant, kept it good, had some amazing peaks under Kirk Ferentz. So I'm thrilled for him. I'm thrilled for him, and I think he is a perfect successor to Hayden Fry.
So, Bill, what are your thoughts coming out of Saturday and putting Ferentz at the top of that chart?
I was happy to see Kirk get it done. I was rooting for him. I mean, I want Iowa to win, and if it's Kirk Ferentz at the helm, then better for him. That was fun. Good for
him. Awesome. Well, welcome to episode 2 of 2018 version of 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladel, and with me as always is Tori Brecht and Bill Delahunt, and we are breaking down the victory over Northern Illinois. And guys, nobody really saw this coming. I mean, we were all calling for the win. We can get into the gnome of knowledge a little bit later. But you know, I don't think we saw the win playing out like this, and certainly not at halftime. Bill, what was your takeaway from the game? I mean, the tale of two halves?
The tale of two halves really does sum it up. I think I used the phrase... I coined the phrase ass-clenchingly infuriating to describe watching Hawkeye football. I had forgotten in the 10 months between seasons just how apt that phrase is to watching Hawkeye football. That first half, if you were from Mars and had never heard of football and saw that, you wouldn't get why anybody was into it. But then the second half, it all started to click. And, you know, we kind of really went away from the passing game and, you know, grinded one out. Classic Kirk Ferentz victory for a classic, you know, milestone win.
Tori, you know, what was your likey?
Well, one of the things that excited me about it is, you know, as Bill mentioned, that first half looked like, oh, my God, here we go again. This has the recipe of how many games, early season games we've seen, North Dakota State, Northern Illinois in the past, Western Michigan. And I fully believed after halftime, okay, you know, we're going to grind this one out and we're going to end up winning 17-14 or 12-10 or something ridiculous like that. But and maybe we are turning the corner as a program. And I think maybe, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but until I see differently, my theme is going to be this all year. I think we've got a little bit of a different mindset with Brian Ferentz on the staff and having a bigger role. I think I get the impression that there was a pretty stiff talking to at the half. And when Iowa got the opportunity to accelerate and put the boot on the throat of their opponent, they frickin' did it. I mean, they even threw with Peyton Mansell, their backup quarterback, when he came in already up by several. So I'm taking it as a huge positive that second half that, you know, Iowa found their footing. And instead of just, you know, grinding it out and setting, you know, getting that small lead and holding on for dear life like we've seen so many times in the past. They just kept coming and coming. So I took that away as a big positive.
I will say that, and this doesn't have anything to do with Brian Ferentz, the defense was just stellar. You know, you talk about one of those classic, you know, North Dakota State or a, you know, lost to other MAC teams that we've seen. When we went 3-and-out and then get the punt blocked, I'm thinking, oh, wow, here we go. We're going to be down, you know, at least 3. And the defense rises to the occasion, and NIU misses the field goal. So credit goes to the defense. I wish we could have kept the shutout going, but yeah, that was all on the twos. Yeah, so
the defense as advertised, I think, maybe even a little better. And what I was reading was that we had kind of a rotation of 7 players up in that front four. And I freaking love that, especially when, and Tori, you made this observation during the game, is when it gets hot and humid like that, depth starts to become an issue because guys get tired or, you know, maybe banged up or cramped up or whatever. And to have basically, you know, I mean, we don't have it up and down the entire roster, but we're starting to put together that Ohio State level caliber where you have essentially 2 teams worth of a DL, and any one of them could take on the offense of the starting offense of Northern Illinois. And I loved it. And bringing in Epi, you know, on obvious passing downs, and they knew exactly what he was in there to do, and they still couldn't stop him. And I just thought that was fantastic. Linebackers were shaky at first, but they pulled it together. Secondary was awesome. So I agree with Bill. The defense was phenomenal. And Bill, you even have to probably, I would love to hear you say some praise for Ratstetter and our punting game, because it was, if there's any such thing as a most improved award for the off season, I think you've got to give it to our punter.
I don't want to do some, you know, told you so stuff, but I did see that coming. You know, 2001, David Bradley was so bad, and I think everybody would agree, I'm not slamming a former Hawkeye, that they brought in Nate Kading to punt occasionally. I mean, his stuff got shanked, his stuff got blocked, and he turned into, I think he was an all-big tenor. So I think that Kirk Ferentz really does address glaring issues over the offseason, and I expected that.
Well, and going back to the defensive line comments, Jim, I think what really makes me excited is I feel like when Iowa's had its best teams, it does get that pressure with the front four. And they were disruptive probably in the whole game. And it was on passing downs and rushing downs. I mean, the times Iowa did give up a few big runs, it was due primarily to the inexperienced linebackers missing their assignments. But they were kind of living in the backfield. And that is a pretty salty offensive line. I would put them on par with a mid to low level Big Ten offensive line.
Right.
And like you said, Jim, having the luxury of being able to bring a 5-star talent like Epiniza off the bench as just kind of a pass rushing specialist is huge. You know, he's just a disruptive, he's a force, and you know, it's just great to be able to see that. And I think against most teams that maybe aren't that deep on the offensive line, you're going to see the Iowa really start to take control of games. One of the stat of the day I saw, I think, was that they held that Northern Illinois had 2 yards of offense in the third quarter. And basically, wow, we're shut out from even moving the ball as long as Iowa's first team defense was in for the entire second half. And that's got to make you feel great.
So pivoting then to the offense, where I think there's probably, you know, a lot more to break down. And I think, you know, to be fair, we are operating with both tackles out. But I thought that the new tackles did fine. I didn't hear them call Sutton Smith's name all day. So, you know, how do you think the offensive line did, Tori?
I was impressed, especially with having the 2 starting tackles out. I think Iowa maybe changed their game plan up a little bit. I think they did a little bit more basic runs and quick passing. I hope to see a little more motion, a little more razzle dazzle, if you will, once they have their starting tackles in. But you're right. Smith had ended with 1 sack and a couple tackles for loss, and you could tell he's a good player, but I mean, he'd just be another guy on the Iowa defensive line.
Right.
I don't think he'd start either.
Yeah, the line was solid. I watched Mark Kallenberger play a few snaps, and when he was on Sutton Smith, and I think Noah Fant came in to help block him, and they pretty much rendered him completely useless for those plays.
Yeah, and then I also noticed that there were not a whole lot of penalties. There were a couple of holds that brought back a big run from Torn Young, and another one was like a downfield. I don't know what it's a new rule. It was like a downfield chip block thingy that I don't quite understand. But otherwise, I mean, for breaking in a brand new line on short notice, you know, it did okay. I think that the concern, or do we want to still talk about things that are good? Because I think the running game looked solid as well. But I think the concern is we all, you know, and a blind man could have told you that that the passing game is just atrocious, and that was supposed to be a strength. So, Bill, I mean, what were they saying on you know, during the broadcast? Because we were just moaning and groaning in the stadium with all the drops.
It seemed like, and forgive me, I didn't DVR the game right. It was Appalachian State and Penn State on all four Big Ten networks, so dope there. But it seemed like, and I called for Brandon Smith to be my pick to click, and they wanted him in the game. They game planned around him, and he wasn't able to catch. I think he had three drops, and then another target went to him, was intercepted, but what really surprised me was Stanley throwing, you know, Jake Christensen-esque passes to guys' shoelaces. I didn't see that coming, and it kind of happened more than a few times. I think his final stat line was like 11 for 23 with one TD and an interception. So hopefully that's first game jitters that'll get cleaned up before Iowa State. And hopefully Iowa State comes in and, you know, still has those first game jitters to make. That wasn't expected.
I am worried about Brandon Smith. I'm officially worried now because, like you said, Bill, he looks the part. He's got the size, the speed, the hands, allegedly, size-wise. But the guy just right now doesn't catch the ball. I don't know if it's nerves or what. And as far as Stanley, you know, I think that first drop kind of rattled him a little bit, the one that Fant had that I think might have gone for a touchdown. You know, and on some of those rifles into the ground, the Jake Christensen type passes, I got the impression that a couple of those were because the coverage was so good. And he's like, okay, I'm just going to chunk this right down by their legs or on the outside. At least I'm going to avoid the pick. So I don't know how much of that, you know, was him not having good accuracy and how much of it is that what feels like the annual issue of Iowa receivers just not getting that much separation. It's a work in progress, and they're going to have to come up. Now, Hockenson was money, and Fant's going to be money, I think. So yeah. I think we have the tools to have a functional passing game, but it's not going to scare anybody all year. I just don't think it is.
And yeah, to add to what you said, along with Hockenson and Fant, I thought Amir Smith-Marzette came up big. I think he's that other receiver to complement Nick Easley. And I think going forward, yeah, if Stanley gets it under control, we're at least serviceable and more so than we've been in a couple of years.
Well, and I'm going to rush to Stanley's defense a little bit here, Bill, and not that you really took him to task too much, but that ball that he threw, that I don't know if it's first or second pass over the shoulder to Noah Fant, could not have been thrown better. I mean, that was a video game level perfect throw. It was just out of the reach of the defender, and it just kind of sailed right over the corner into the breadbasket, and then it hit the ground. The one that he had to Hockenson, which I loved, and it actually bashed it right across his face mask. And Tori and I were joking that he was getting so frustrated with the drops. He's kind of like, you know, drop this. I'll hit you right in the face mask, you know. And Hockenson,
if you can't catch it, it's going to go between your eyes.
I'm going to just stick it in your helmet. You know, I'm just going to wedge it in your ear hole then. So, I mean, I think, yeah, there were a couple, I would say maybe two or three of those little bounce pass type things. And I think those will get cleaned up. But I would be frustrated. I think if I were in Stanley's shoes, I think he has a right to be frustrated about just not getting the help. And to your point, Brandon Smith needs to take a seat. I know he's been, like, they've been singing his praises in practices and in camps now for a couple of years, but, you know, he's fast. Maybe get him some, get the jitters out with some end arounds or something short or something to get his confidence up, because he just is not getting it done. So
I don't agree with giving him a seat though, Jim. I actually like, Bill's idea, well, what Bill said the idea was this time, I think you try to establish him early. I think try that at least one more time, because he you really need to have that receiver out there. So, you know, I think it's a little too early to start looking for a replacement. I don't know that a cavalry is coming in that can be any better. So question I had, and Bill, maybe you can answer since you were watching on TV. I didn't see any passes to running backs. Is that accurate? And that was kind of a big part of our offense last year with Akram Wadley. Did you see any?
You know, now that you mention it, I don't actually recall any, and I'll probably get, you know, slammed by somebody who you know, does have the full stats in front of them. I'm looking at the receiving, and
Ty Sergeant, one reception for 6 yards.
6 yards. Yeah. I think, and I don't want to start talking up Iowa State too much yet, but maybe that's our ace in the hole there. Maybe we're going to get the running backs involved in the passing game against them. Because, you know, reading all the preseason coverage, all the fall camp stuff, they were saying that we had three receiving threats coming out of the backfield. So maybe that's yet to be explored.
Yeah, I don't think we dug very far into the offensive playbook. And honestly, why would you? The defense was playing so good. It didn't really feel like you were in any danger of having to, you know, catch up or anything like that. So I guess the idea was keep it basic, keep it simple, and see if we can get something going. Eventually, they did with the run game, and God knows the passing game didn't look like they were ready for anything more advanced than what they were trying. So, you know, I guess we'll see how it goes next week against Iowa State. I fully expect to see a little bit more creativity.
Yeah. So, well, I think that's probably all that needs to be said about this one. I think, you know, we were looking for a tough battle, maybe even an upset minded MAC contender. And I think what we got is, we got exactly that for about 30 minutes.
And so we get our first toast. We get our first toast of the season. And it's 144 KF victories, right?
144 KF.
What do you guys drinking?
Something I noticed, and I'm having a Wurststeiner Pilsner, thank you for asking, is that Kirk's first victory, which I was actually at, I was a senior in high school in 1999.
God, I'm old.
Iowa led Northern Illinois 3-0 at halftime, ended up beating them 24-0 down the stretch, and it looked for a while like that might play out again. I don't know, you know, that Matthew McConaughey wild. Time is a flat
time
circle.
Is a flat circle.
That's all. I just thought that was a fun fact to throw in there.
Well, I'm not. What are you drinking tonight, Tori? What's your poison?
Well, I know Bill always likes my ridiculous high school concoctions. This is a new one. I've come up with this summer, and it's so white trash. Hard. I don't know. Can we still say that? I don't know if that's politically correct.
I'll allow it.
Okay, but Jim's gonna be mad because I take a really good whiskey. I take Templeton Rye and I mix it with Dr. Pepper 10, and I don't know what it is, but there's something about the. And it has to be Templeton, because I've tried it with cheaper stuff. I've tried it with Evan Williams, and I've tried it with Jim Beam. But there's something chemical about Templeton and Dr. Pepper that just sings to the taste buds. So, yes, it's garbage, but I highly recommend it.
Would it work with Diet Dr. Pepper? Does it have to be Diet
No,
Dr. Pepper?
No, Diet too? Dr. Pepper is gross. It's got to either be real Dr. Pepper, or I go down to the Dr. Pepper 10 calorie, which is essentially like a Coke Zero, but no, Diet Dr. Pepper tastes like kerosene and it's gross.
Okay, well, I'm gonna break with both of you guys here. I'm having a small vanilla whiteys because I took everybody out for dinner and haven't finished that yet. So I'll try the Templeton. So with that, let's toast the victory and then let's pivot to the rest of the show.
So, guys, I have failed in my duties as showrunner here. I got kind of caught up in the holiday weekend. We were at the lake house. I did the whole thinking it was Sunday thing. So I was trying to line up another spectacular guest on the heels of last week's stellar pair. And I hate to report, but I have failed the podcast, y'all.
You had one job. No, it's fine, Tori. You know, Tori. I mean, it's fine. I mean, we know that you're going to pick up the slack by recording and editing. as well. Yeah, that was the real comedy. But the good news is we had two guests last week and zero this week, so we're still averaging one guest per episode, and I think our audience appreciates that. And if you don't, please reach out to us on Twitter or on Facebook, because this is the only podcast with a 100% money-back guarantee. We will get you back exactly.
We will refund all of your money.
All of the money you've ever paid to us.
We have never had anyone accuse us that they didn't get their money's worth from this podcast.
You get what you pay for. Quality, you know, like this, doesn't come cheap. It comes free. So in lieu of
a guest, you guys, I would suggest that I there's some issues around. We're a week in, so let's take a look around the conference, the Big Ten, and then let's take a look around just college football as a whole. And I'll go ahead and kick it off and say, Jim Harbaugh, hot seat.
Ooh, I think the shine has come off the fake Wolverine Jesus. It's just they peeled off all the layers and found out there was just this, you know, weird little booger eater under all that hype. he's got to do something, and he keeps losing to the big name teams. He keeps losing to the ranked teams, and what I think was going to kill him. Guys, is that if he loses to Ohio State again, I think he's done this year.
Yeah, I think his khakis are starting to warm up. I'm looking at Twitter, and Braylon Edwards, you know, great receiver from the 2001 to 2004 seasons, I think he was there, is calling him out and called the O-line garbage, said that Michigan football is trash, except then he pulled Iowa into it, which I kind of take an exception to. He said, I will ask and really think about this before you get mad, .. Is Michigan better than Iowa? Which,
no.
I have to say, no.
Well, wait. He did ask us to really think about it. So, no.
The dumb thing is you don't have to think about it because the numbers don't lie. Iowa beats top 10 teams. Iowa goes to big bowl games. You know, Iowa can beat their rivals. Hi, Nebraska. Hi, Iowa State. Hi, sometimes Wisconsin. You know, Harbaugh is a fraud. And, you know, if Braylon Edwards wants to go down the same road that idiot ex-athletic director at Nebraska did, is he the ex-athletic director? If not, he should be. But, you know, to try to trash Iowa as this kind of ho-hum, boring team. Hey, you know what Iowa and Kirk Ferentz do? They just win. So, you know, maybe he doesn't sleep over at recruits' houses and shower with them or whatever. But, you know, he's going to win a hell of a lot more games. And what's Harbaugh's record against Iowa? Can somebody remind me of that?
That'd be 0-1.
0-2 if you count 85, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But, Tori, and I always joke, you know, with folks, is imagine if Harbaugh was doing that to high school girls in Michigan, hanging out in there and camping out in their yard. People would think it was a lot less charming. But I agree with you.
How do we know he's not?
Well, that's true. And I'll go even a little bit further. Is calling Michigan trash and saying that they're not as good as Iowa should not get you suspended from the Big Ten Network. That's quality journalism. I mean, that's just pointing out the obvious and making it, you know, that's not fake news. Let's put it that way. So I don't get it. I think even drawing the comparison is a little lame. So, well, let's pivot a little bit then and talk about closer to home here, and what we saw from the league, maybe starting with the early week Thursday showdown between Northwestern and Purdue. I was really hoping both these teams could lose somehow. You know, talk about your ill-timed hailstorm. I think, you know, we could have used one maybe in West Lafayette, but I was also thinking that because they had nothing else to talk about, we could expect the hype machine to just pick up on this. You know, whichever team comes out of that is going to be like right there with Wisconsin and challenging the West. And I don't think we saw that, but I don't know what your thoughts are on that first game or any of the Big Ten games. I think everybody wants to talk about the Penn State game or the Michigan game, but what were some of the other things that you saw?
Well, my first thought is still that I hate week one conference games. I don't think teams are at their best. I don't think that should play a role in how the conference shakes out. I'm against it, as you guys know. So I don't like that. I mean, I think it was a momentum builder for Northwestern. It really took a lot of wind out of Purdue's sails, and it's going to hurt them.
Good.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, but it filled Fitzgerald sales so bad, right? So
he needs to stop filling his sales and eat some salads. But
but yeah, no, I think that I'm opposed to those. And then the news I saw today that really kind of bummed me out, and I know they weren't going to be a factor and they're not a good team, but did you guys see that the one great player on Illinois, that receiver Mikey Dudek, is again out for the entire season with a knee injury?
Holy crap.
That's third full season that kid's not going to be able to play, and what a heartbreaker.
He's going to transfer to Iowa State, and somehow he'll be in his eighth year of college and playing for against us.
He'll be on the,
get 150 yards and three touchdowns.
Right.
Jess Settles scholarship program, the sixth-year senior.
Exactly. To Tori, to your point about first week conference games, I completely agree. I hate that. But I guess there is some precedent for that. Hayden Fry's first two seasons at Iowa, he opened up with Indiana at home and then the next year on the road. So yeah. I guess that's not a new thing, but I'm with you. I think there's a time and a place for conference play.
And I'll say this because you were probably a toddler, Bill, but back then there were only three channels, and putting Iowa and Indiana in week one probably just made a whole lot of sense because you had to play them, but nobody was going to watch that shit. So.
Probably a good point.
The two that we have coming up are Rutgers and Indiana. So, I mean, better that than a big heavyweight, I guess.
Like North Dakota or Northern Illinois?
But my God, you guys, just imagine how you'd feel if you lose one of those games. I mean, you're 10 minutes maybe or an hour, couple hours into your season, and you're already basically out of the conference race and your season's ruined. Yay, college football.
Well, college football is kind of like a single elimination tournament from beginning on Labor Day. But I actually,
which is why you start with cupcakes, man. You got to ease into this. As I put on Hawkeye Report, it's like making love, man. You don't just jump right in and go at it. You know, you got to ease into this thing, you know?
Hold on, Tori. I'm getting my notebook.
I don't know that. We should be comparing notes. That we don't want to get that E rating after our podcast from iTunes.
That's why I said making love, Jim. Yeah. It's a natural thing.
Well, I like it or not, I mean, this is the trend that it's going to, and Iowa's going to have to step up. I do like the idea of having the TV audience all to ourselves, like we do with the Black Friday. And if we're not going to have Black Friday, then I like having the opening. And if you have to play a conference game in week one, then please make it Rutgers. Or Illinois or something like that. So I let me put it this way. I think that's a much better, much sounder scheduling decision than North Dakota State or, MAC schools or having to play Iowa State, you know, hell or high water. So, I kind of feel like it's a little bit safer of a bet, and it's going to get you a little bit more chatter because you already got a conference win. Again, if you pull it off, but I'd rather see that than some of the other decisions that we've made. And then you look at the SEC and they're playing, you know, Tallahassee Community College and Furman and all this stuff. And then I don't know why no one ever takes them to task on their schedule.
I mean, ESPN, it's the SEC network. So basically, they're not going to bash those guys. So, it is what it is, but, you can kind of live with it. What about Maryland taking out Texas again?
Well, I think the two most overrated, it's like you could set your watch by it. Texas and Michigan, always in the top 25, no justification for it based on their past. And when I say past, I mean recent past, like 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. Like that's college football is one of the weirdest examples of in our current culture where the what have you done for me lately does not apply.
Yeah,
I mean, people still think Nebraska is a blue blood program. I mean, come on. At what point you start talking 10? Why? Like, it's got to be the only way I can look at it is it's got to be about 50 years, because the only team that would kind of fit Nebraska or Minnesota. How many national champions do they have? Haven't been anything since like the 60s, right?
Yale. So what about Yale? You know, Yale and Harvard used to duke it out back.
Look out for the University of Chicago, you guys.
Yeah,
was a weird game, Tori, that Maryland-Texas game. I still don't know who I really wanted to win that game, because Maryland's filthy, as we found out in the past 6 months. But I've always kind of hated Texas until recently. I spent some time in Austin for work, and I liked their quarterback, Ellinger. So I guess good for the Big Ten and good for our strength of schedule. But
Well, Austin is an island of cool, though. I mean, you can't let that define your perception of Texas. But I'll take incompetent over freaking evil any day of the week.
The thing that just boggles my mind about Texas, though, is they literally, their recruiting is basically, you take a weekend and send out a letter to the top 50 kids in the state of Texas that are within 100 miles of you and be like, oh, hey, do you want to come play here? And you get a whole bunch of 4 and 5 stars. and maybe that's their problem. You know, we've heard about how Ferentz, you know, he'll overlook sometimes the highly rated guys if they're not his kind of guys or whatever. Maybe if you can just have your pick of the litter and you just go for the big star guys, you're not building a cohesive team, maybe? I don't know. I have no theory on why that shouldn't be able to work for him. Because it does on the old college football games for PlayStation.
It's just so weird that they have more 4 and 5 star folks on their roster than Maryland, I think, has had in the last 5 years. Or Maryland has their share, too, of good players, too. So it's very strange. I think you're right, Tori. I don't even think these guys go through security or check a bag before they've got their first, you know, 20 commitments signed. It's crazy how little effort they have to do, and I think Alabama does that nationally, right? And then, you know, meanwhile, our guys are, you know, pounding the pavement and running through airports trying to grab those overlooked diamonds in the rough. But I don't know what to tell you. Texas, Michigan, I still think, you know, despite this weekend, I still think Notre Dame always gets a pass for the first preseason. And we don't know because they beat Michigan. Okay, what does that tell us? Not much. But I think also to the point is, you know, is that these do matter. You know, these things, people are like, well, this will shake out. Well, there's some inertia to these preseason polls. You know, you can only, you know, and I think we saw this in some seasons where Iowa had one or two losses or one loss and was constantly ranked lower than 2 and 3 loss teams because these were blue bloods that started the season, you know, in the top 10. So.
Well, you want to see something that's going to make your blood boil? Go look at the Big Ten Network released its Big Ten Power Rankings today, and guess who's number 3?
Who?
Michigan.
Get out of here.
Go look on Twitter. Guess who's number 8? Iowa.
Get out of here. So I got a point to make about that as well, because Miami, I don't know how much football you guys watched this weekend, was ranked number 8. I don't know why, because they finished last season on a 3-game losing streak. They got pounded by LSU, 33-3 in the fourth quarter. They tacked on 2 late field goals to make it respectable, or not field goals, but touchdowns. But still, imagine if Iowa started the season ranked 8, and all of a sudden, you know, we drop one to Iowa State, lose to Wisconsin and Penn State, finish 9-3. That's like 15, top 15 ranking. But, you know, if you start in the 40s where we are, you know, every loss just keeps putting you back. And I kind of hate that about college football. And I really wish that rankings wouldn't come out till like after week 4. Wouldn't that make more sense?
Yeah. And I'll just point out, Tori, not only is Michigan ranked 3rd, ahead of teams like Michigan State and Penn State that actually won and were ranked above them last week. Iowa won and dropped 2 points from 6 to 8. How in the hell? It just starts to boggle the mind.
What is a power ranking anyway? Is that?
Well, I mean, it's just where kind of the writers think that how good each team is, and it's just for entertainment purposes. It doesn't play a role in anything.
PFM.
But again, it's that continual narrative. You know, that's the reason why jackasses like Braylon Edwards go, whoa, God, is Michigan as bad as Iowa? You know, because, you know, everywhere else, and I don't know if this is a beautiful thing or a terrible thing about football, but everywhere else in our society and our culture now, things are data-driven, and they're based on reality,
merit.
I mean, other than politics. But, you know, in the actual real world, that's where, yeah. I mean, college football is basically like the politics of sport, you know? It's a political sport. And it's all about the narrative and what you want to believe in, yeah. All of that.
Sure. I mean, that this hurts us in recruiting. And, you know, we're starting to sound like, you know, some woe is us, you know, poor us Iowa fans. But I think we're speaking the truth here. That is It's messed up, and
it matters. It matters in recruiting. It matters
when all you can control is winning or losing.
Right.
Not getting recognized when you win and seeing somebody lose and get recognized is infuriating.
Or seeing any kind of an undefeated team get ranked behind a team with one or two losses. You're like, how? What else should I have done besides be perfect? That used to drive me nuts about 2015. It's like, should we have gone out and played some games, you know, on Wednesday? Just to kind of pad the stats or what, you know, it is mind-numbing. And I think to your point, Tori, and to Bill, it's like we're not just, you know, shaking our fists at the cloud. This does it does matter. It does play out in terms of recruiting and how hard you have to work. Look at
one final thought from me on this, and then I'll
Oliver Martin.
Out.
I mean, look at that guy. He, you know, what was the statistic that it's been 50 quarters since Michigan threw a touchdown pass to a wide receiver? And yet we keep losing the recruits, in-state recruits.
This is my dream school.
No, I will say one thing, and then I'm done with this subject, is Michigan and Miami are both riding four-game losing streaks right now, dating back to last season, and they are going to see themselves ranked in the top 25 this week, you know, having lost 100% of their games in this young season. And Iowa, meanwhile, is riding a three-game winning streak, including a bowl victory, dating back to last season, and we will be hovering around 38 or so
received
in the also
votes.
Votes. Yeah.
Also receiving votes. That's our ranking for the entire season.
There you go.
Yeah. Let's pivot then to my what's bugging me this week. And this started as a kind of an offhanded comment during the sun-scorched third quarter, fourth quarter, where we were loving the game, but it was getting a little warm and a little ridiculous with some of the media timeouts. And I think, Tori, you noted that, you know, there was one point where there was a media timeout. They came back, they played one run up the middle, and then a punt, and then another full media timeout.
The crowd was actually booing the guy when he was announcing full media timeouts.
Well, and for good reason, because it was not the hottest game in Kinnick history, but I read it was like the highest dew point. You know, it was just muggy and humid, and it felt like the sun was under some kind of a moisture magnifying glass. And
it was it was like two rats mating in a wool sock.
Oh, there you go. Two wet rats.
I'm stealing that, Tori. That's a good one.
But one of the things that I just kind of made a comment to Tori is I was tired of I said that we're kind of like the frog in the pot of water, as they keep turning up the number of commercials, and those it's like stealing a minute or two here or there throughout the season. And 5-7 years on, I said I think college football games are a lot longer than they used to be. And I think he said, well, it's, you know, there's a lot of factors, maybe not. And so I started reading on this, Tori, and I think you'll be surprised that. One, in the last 10 years, college football games are getting a lot longer, almost a half an hour longer than they were, let's say, in 2007. And two, and this is the part that really bugs me, is that coaches and the NCAA are already discussing this as a problem, but they're going right to the rule book, as opposed to talking about what they can do about changing the broadcasts or maybe keeping the commercials you know, less frequent or shortening them. Instead, they go right to, well, maybe we should let the clock run on first downs, like the NFL does, or maybe we should have 25-second play clocks instead of 40-second play clocks. All this stuff, and I'm like, let's change the game instead of the way we change the way we broadcast the game, and that did irritate me a little bit. So, the games are getting longer, and I'm a little offended at the proposed solutions of actually tinkering with the rule book.
I got one suggestion, and. People may know or may not know this, that amazing podcaster is not my full-time job. I'm actually a video guy by day, and I'm actually watching a game right now, and football is played on a green field, which means that with video, you can put the line of scrimmage in blue, you can put the first down line in yellow, you can use the telestrator to circle a guy that you like,
right.
And you can have the down and distance arrow out there. Why not have, you know, kind of like a Budweiser ad or something going on, you know, in one of the corners of the screen, so you can play simultaneously while still making some money. I think maybe that's a solution they can look into. I think soccer does that, don't they? Just kind of run ads.
Well, yeah, there are no commercial breaks during soccer. As Tori likes to point out, soccer is more of a continuous flow, and it seems like that maybe there's some lessons to be learned there, as opposed to, I guess I'm not opposed to where we are. I don't like the idea of let's find a way to shave more time off the gameplay so we can squeeze in even more commercials and maybe get the game up to 4 hours. You know, it's like, come on.
Well, I guess it's a counter argument, although I agree with you, it is getting ridiculous and sitting there is frustrating. But what I would say is, you know, we're one of the things we were looking at the game that was so impressive was that new North End Zone, and it's in the tens of millions of dollars. And that was built on the Big Ten network money, and the Big Ten network money comes from those ads. So, you know, as long as the filthy lucre is there and it's an arms race and everybody wants the shiny, bright, fancy new toys, it's going to be a necessary evil. So it doesn't surprise me in the least that what they're looking to cut is the stuff that doesn't make them money. They're going to keep the stuff that makes them money. Right, exactly. Yeah. It's frustrating. It absolutely is. But I also like the big, fancy, shiny stuff, too. Well, so,
but to be fair, Tori, we don't sit in those seats. We don't sit in those press boxes. I mean, I think that they're taking out the seats that we buy and they're putting in these press boxes. Is that Big Ten money or is that, you know, is that corporate sponsorship money? I mean, we could go down. I guess my point is that when
are you look, some kind of communist? So are you like, is this where we're going with that?
I'm just saying that when you start pulling at this thread of why are games getting longer and why are they approaching the 4 hour mark, you start to see everything that's wrong about football and money in football and the monetization of what should have been, you know, an amateur sport. That's all I'm saying.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. So it's a rabbit hole. And
we already know you're a communist, Bill.
Bill, what's your beef today for this week?
I'm kind of curious, and I guess now is a good time to start to pivot to Iowa State. How Iowa State is going to respond to having their game rained out? Are they going to come out, you know, firing on all cylinders, or are they going to have some first game jitters? And conversely, they've got all a good chunk of film on Iowa to look at, and we have none. So again, I'm really curious to see how that plays out. What do you guys think of that?
Well, let me start with saying the controversy, I guess, over their suspensions. I don't really view that much as a controversy. I guess where I'm sitting, if Iowa had been rained out, I would fully expect our defensive linemen and our offensive linemen to come back and play next week against Iowa State. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I've seen a lot of Iowa fans and some others kind of taking pot shots at Iowa State about it. But, you know, the actual game time is just part of what goes into a college football week, and they're so limited anyway.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have a huge problem with their suspended guys coming back. So that's kind of where I start with that. What do you guys think about the quote unquote controversy over the suspensions?
I don't see a controversy necessarily, Tori. I mean, you know, it's not the kids' fault. It's not fans. It's the weather, you know, and Nebraska canceled their game too. And it doesn't look like either of them are going to be able to reschedule. So in a way, everybody was suspended.
I will be the contrarian here and say that I do have a problem with it, I guess. I guess I read that the language was they're suspended one game and they didn't play a game. So, you know, what's that supposed to mean? Do words not mean anything anymore? And, you know, I go back to that, who's the guy from Cyclone Fanatic, Paul Clark, who wrote the Holier Than Now article about Iowa football and all its woes and ills back in 2008. You know, they'd say the same about Iowa if we, you know, pulled something like that. If our guys suddenly were able to play Iowa State if we didn't play our first game. So, yeah. I'm going to look down my nose at Iowa State.
It's kind of and I don't want to say dick move on our podcast, it's kind of a D'Antonio move, let's say. To call this
very D'Antonian.
It is D'Antonian to say your suspension is sentenced to time served. Now get out there and play.
Maybe like sit him out a half or something. Because I get where you're saying also, Bill. When you're out a game, you're out a game. They weren't out a game. They were out 5 minutes, I think, is what they played. But on the other hand, I also feel like you're almost making it a 2 week suspension then too, if you've been changing what they're doing in practice or community service or whatever. I guess I just kind of put the shoe on the other foot and try to think how I'd feel about it. You know, we had four guys suspended for game one. I feel like I would feel like they should really be able to play in week two. I really do. So I'm trying, and you know me, you guys, I'm not going to say anything nice about Iowa State if I don't have to. And it's hard to separate their jackass fans sometimes from, you know, the program. And so I guess from a program standpoint, I don't have a huge problem with it, although I do think it is, you know, convenient that they'll be magically back for Iowa, I guess.
Yeah. And what kind of Mickey Mouse operation are they running over there in Ames that they had to cancel that game and couldn't reschedule it for Sunday morning or even Monday? We got a 3-day weekend here. South Dakota's not too far. And I guess, you know, you could even say the same to, you know, the team 300 miles to the west of us in Lincoln. What, you know, they spend all these months looking forward to Frost's first game and then can't figure out how to get Akron to play him the next day.
I don't know, guys. I guess I'm a little more sympathetic because, I mean, the weather is just weird, and you can't control it, and certainly you don't want 50, 60,000 people out in the middle of a lightning storm or a hailstorm.
Well, wait, we are talking about Nebraska fans. Though.
Yeah. So. And besides, you know better than anybody, Bill, that when, you know, if you're sitting in the top nosebleed section of Memorial Stadium, you're probably the highest conductive point for 30 miles around you. So, of course, you're going to draw the lightning. There's just no escaping it. But I think to your point, you know, it takes so much to pull off, you know, so much infrastructure and planning to pull off a football game. It's not, I guess I'm not going to beat them up too much for not having a plan B. Maybe after this, they'll start putting contingencies in place for these things, kind of the way baseball does. But I thought it was interesting that there was a communication of what happens if you get late into the season and both of these teams are on the border for bowl eligibility and they've only played 11 games. Now what do you do? Do you try to squeeze somebody? Do you try to find somebody that has the same bye week and try to set something up in, you know, late October or something like that? So my theory is, honestly, guys, they should play each other. And
yeah, the Omaha Bowl.
Yeah. And then
bowl on December 15th.
Right. And then Nebraska will have the honor of being beaten by both Iowa schools in the same year.
Yeah, there was some Nebraska writer on Twitter that was like saying how stupid it was because, you know, why should Nebraska deign to play a subpar team, you know, just to and I was like, dude, you wouldn't even be favored. I mean, Nebraska would be the frickin' underdog in that game. And I have no problem saying that. That is the honest to God truth. So, you know, back to Bill's original question, though, is who does it give a bigger advantage to? I think I'd rather be Iowa in this situation, honestly.
Definitely.
I mean, yeah, the part about not having game tape, that kind of stinks. But, I mean, you know, what did Iowa really show on their game tape? I mean, I don't know how much they're going to gain off of having that compared to us, compared to getting the first game jitters out, some of the mistakes. At least we'll be able to self-scout. We'll know where we need to shore things up and fix things. They still have no idea who's still got problems, where their weak points are. So, you know, I fully expect them to use it as an excuse, their fan base, after we put a knot on their head next weekend. But I am perfectly fine with that.
I totally agree, Tori. I think that there's some potential. What Bill is saying is that, you know, they're kind of an unknown to us, and they have a little bit, at least they could sit and watch our film, but we didn't show them much. But I think more importantly, I mean, we've talked to a number of guests on the podcast, and some of them former players, and I think one of the common things that always struck me is how important it is to get on the field that first time, to get that first snap, whether you're a lineman or a skill player, just to kind of to get hit that first time, you know, and to kind of basically get the jitters out of your stomach, and to think that they've never done any of that. They're coming at this almost like they had a week one bye. I'd much rather be in our situation. And if you believe that, and this would be a good question for Bill, if you subscribe to that philosophy that you make the most improvement between week one and week two, then look out, because they're still on week zero.
I like it. You're giving me confidence now. I agree with both of you guys, and I do think it bodes well for Iowa, and, you know, bring them on.
All right, folks. Well, that's a lot of bile for everybody to take in. I don't know if it was therapeutic for us or our audience.
I feel better.
The 12 Saturdays Mad podcast.
It's the 12 Saturdays group therapy. Let's take a look then, because we're getting towards the end of our time. Let's take a look at our picks, the GNOME, and then make our picks for Iowa State. So nobody, I'm going to put my claim down here on winning this week, and I don't know how controversial this is, but none of us saw the blowout. None of the margin of victory, Iowa's margin of victory, was 26 points. All of our picks to clicks were iffy at best. Maybe Ivory Kelly Martin, Tory's pick to click was pretty good, but he had the closest score at Iowa plus 11. I had Iowa plus 18, and Bill had Iowa at plus 14 with Brandon Smith. So your PTC is like an anchor around your neck right now, Bill, I'm afraid to say. So I'm going to say winner this week, week one, goes to the handsome gentleman from LeClaire. Any disputes on that? Come on, we can usually fight about these things.
Mine is not a dispute, because I think with the margin of victory, that is fair. I will make two notes, though. One, the game played out exactly how I said. I said it was going to be a white knuckler for the whole first half. We're going to be sitting at halftime going, oh my God, here we go again. And then I was going to wear them down and put them away. So 100% accurate on that. Just didn't know we'd be as good at score as much as we did.
And I agree with you.
I will say that it was ass-clenchingly infuriating. And they wanted so bad my pick-to-click to be involved in the game. The first pass or play of the 2018 season was a pass to Brandon Smith. So and I will my onions on this. I just would miss by it.
And I want to also add that it was two pretty ticky-tacky penalties that prevented my pick to click from having over 130 That's yards true. Rushing, which he should have had. So, you know, but I concede. I concede.
Well, and we should probably establish at the outset that obviously if we all pick Iowa, and we do that a lot, then we have to go to some other tiebreaker. And I think the first tiebreaker should be like margin of score differential. And then the second one should be pick to click, or it could be the other way around. I'm fine with that because neither of us really nailed it with the pick to click this week. But
I think it's the score, because that's what it's all about. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like if we were gambling, you can't be like, well, you know, if they hadn't had that blocked field goal, I would have covered the spread, Mr. Las Vegas bookmaker.
Yeah.
Can I have my money?
Why are we going out to the alley? Yeah. So, okay. Well, then next week, of course, we have Iowa State coming to town. And last year was probably one of the better games of the series. Although we say that as Iowa fans, I think Iowa State fans would probably think that the double overtime thing in, 2014 was more
there. I have
no
idea what you're talking about, Jim.
I must have blocked it, But you know, last year not only did it turn out to be a good game for us winning in overtime, but also I think put this rivalry on the map for the first time in a long time as watchable football, I want to say, and something that, you know, even folks outside of the state of Iowa could sit and enjoy.
CBS Sportsline listed it as their I think fourth best rivalry game of the year.
That is just weird now. But,
wow,
you know, if Iowa State replaces Minnesota as a competent rival, so be it.
Yeah, I like that idea, actually.
Yeah. So with that, I guess I should go first. And I think the spread right now is, what is it, Bill? Six?
3.5.
3.5? Oh, man, mm-hmm. It's really come down.
Opened at 4, and it's now 3.5.
So I actually see Iowa doing well. I don't see this one going to overtime. I see Iowa winning, and I see him winning fairly more comfortably than people think for exactly all the reasons we discussed when we were analyzing their rainout. So I see this one as a 27-14 Iowa win. I see us with a little bit more offensive practice. Stanley is going to be a lot more crisp in the passing game, and I just do not think that their defense can they will just wither under our actual offensive line as opposed to the imitation offensive line, and Torrin Young, Ivory Kelly Martin, and Mekhi Sargent are just going to bruise them up. So I see 24-17. My pick to click is going to be the man who wants redemption, and it will be Noah Fant.
I do like that pick, Jim, especially your pick to click. I can see a big game from Fant. I'm going to ride this. I really do think that Iowa has an advantage having a full game under their belt. I like our offense against Iowa State. I don't think their defense is that great. Their offense does scare me a little bit, but man, after what I saw our D-line do last week, I'm feeling this may be irrationally exuberant, but I'm going to go 38-17. I like Iowa in this game. I like that it's a later game. Remember the last time
we were
a little nervous about them and had a night game at Kinnick against Iowa State? We blew their doors off. I think this one, again, will probably start out a little close, but I think this Iowa team has that grind-you-down, nasty bullies of the Big Ten are back, man. I like that. My pick to click, Torrin Young, the rolling ball of Butcher Dines, who, by the way, I was calling to be put in the entire first half, was I not, Jim?
This is true. I will vouch
for
this.
And then all they do is put the kid in, and he rumbles for 40
yards. Well, they were saving
yards.
It for when they were bruised and bloody, and then they just let him kind of clean him up.
Secret weapon.
That's my theory.
Yeah, I like it. So, yeah, I got 38-17 good guys, and Torrin Young, the kid from Monona Grove High School in Madison, right around the corner from my high school, and that's my pick.
Right, excellent picks, guys, and I have to agree. I think Iowa wins, but I'm going to pull Lee Corso here and say, not so fast, my friends. I want that gnome back, and so I'm going to play the contrarian yet again, and I'm going to say officially Iowa loses. I'm going to tell you why. Kirk Ferentz has strung together three victories in a row against Iowa State twice, but he's never beat them four straight. Mm. No Hawkeyes have graduated under Kirk Ferentz undefeated against the Cyclones. So having said that, and the fact that we have no film on Iowa State and they've got plenty on us, I'm going to say the Clowns come in and pull the upset. My pick to click will be Jack Hockaday making way too many tackles on David Montgomery way down the field. Clowns come in. Campbell is auditioning for that head coaching job at Ohio State, and This is the one he puts on the resume.
And I guess you don't need to pick a score, since if it happens, you win, and if it doesn't, you lose. But, I mean, you want to give us a score anyway, just for shits
and giggles? It's going to at least be close, right?
Yeah, well, let's say 21-18. There you go. And
heartbreaker.
You know, they line up to kick a field goal, and they miss, but Kirk Ferentz had called a timeout already, so they get to kick again.
Let me clarify this. So, Bill, you're just like verbalizing your nightmares now. Basically.
Exactly.
You've had this dream. I know you have.
We've already established
all my bases here.
We've already established that this is no longer a podcast. It's one of those online group therapy sessions. So, you know, Bill, tell us where the football nightmare touched you on the doll.
My nightmare actually is. I have this dream quite often, actually, that I was playing Nebraska, and I can't get to a TV to watch it, but everybody keeps telling me that Nebraska is just killing us. I do have that dream a lot.
So I have the Hawkeye nightmares all the time, too, and it's usually like a bowl game that I had to travel and spend a lot of money to go to, pretty much because this has been every bowl experience I've ever done.
I was going to say, Jim, I hate to break this to you, but that actually all happened.
That's not a nightmare. That's a memory. But, you know, and it's like you're playing some team and, you know, it's like, and that I forgot to go to the game and somehow I'm stuck in traffic in some weird city with a rental car trying to get into some game that I was getting shellacked in. So that's my football nightmare. And it usually starts around like, it starts happening like the week after Ragbri when I stop thinking about summer and start focusing on football.
Well, in Bill's defense, he's been calling for Iowa to lose to Iowa State and beat Wisconsin all off season. So you got to stay consistent. So I applaud you for that, Bill. But let me ask you this on an honest question, though, Bill. Don't you feel a little better about this Iowa-Iowa State game than you did before the Northern Illinois game? I know I do.
Yeah. Off the record, you know, not in our gnome of knowledge discussion. Yes, I do. I think that our offensive line has some depth. I think the passing game can only go one direction, and that's up. I like our running backs. I like all three of them. I love our defense, our D-line, and I think the issues at linebacker are going to get cleaned up. And like we said, Iowa State's got those first game jitters yet to.
You can say it. I love our punting. Come on.
Our punting's great. I never had an issue with the punting.
No, last actually. Year it was kind of your weekly lamentation. So I just want to get you on the record there.
I knew that was going to get cleaned up.
All right. Well, with that, let's hope that Bill's picks look laughable this time next year or this time next week. Because if you're saying I told you so, then that means something terrible has happened, and we'll have to reassess and get healthy against you and I. But for right now, we're 1-0. We didn't get rained out, and we're number 8 with a bullet in the Big Ten power rankings.
Jesus.
So I guess we can close it off, Tori, on Iowa.
Go Hawks!
Beat Nebraska.